I told these guys before we started, as we're talking about what the banter topic is, I said, don't worry about it. I got a weird soapbox to go on. And I do.
I can't wait.
It's so I am the kind of person that when I listen to music, I listen to like a whole album at once. Okay. And the reason being is because to me, an album is supposed to be something that is supposed to be experienced together. Like they compose those songs, they put them in that order and all that kind of stuff. And I remember growing up, like we were like the generation of like iPods and stuff like that. Everybody started to have like MP3 players around our time. And I remember seeing people that just had like one song. They just had like this song by Jay-Z. They just had this song by The Game or this song by this person or that person. And I was like, there's a whole album attached to that one song and you only got the one? And it always bothered me and I don't know why, but like, am I crazy or am I just, is this just a,
yeah.
Oh, damn. Well, you're not still like that pure, right? Like that made sense back then.
But wait, what? Okay, I mean, it must be me and Jake on the crazy then. Okay, I'm going to rattle off a couple albums that cannot be listened to out of sequence. Crater Lake by Addy. Kel, you know that one. And you know for a fact it cannot be listened to out of sequence or just pieces, parts. There is The People We Became by No Big Deal, his latest album. It's just any Indie Tribe album. And turn on any Indie Tribe album. You try to listen to the thing out of order. And it's just... It's like, wait, what is this tag on the end of the song? What is, huh? And yeah, it just doesn't make any sense.
Right. So there's a piece of this that I like is that when they do the composing for these songs, and they will tie one song into the next.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is a very interesting experience because you can listen to a whole album straight like that. I remember that, like, Linkin Park did it. I remember that like a bunch of the like, you know, rock and metal bands that I used to listen to, they kind of did that stuff and all the EDM, you know, artists and everything would do that. But there's something here that I don't know if many people have experienced, and that is secret tracks on the end of a CD.
I remember them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's two that come to mind in particular. Okay. Slipknot had one. I think it was Volume 3 was the album. Okay. And there was a song on, there was the very last song. It was a good song. But then, like, the track continued in silence for, like, 12 minutes.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, the hardest fucking song in the whole album was right there. And it was just like, you would never know. You would never know if you didn't sit down and listen to it.
I remember those days.
Yeah.
I remember secret tracks on CDs.
Yeah,
the world is full of so much mystery, and Google didn't exist.
this might be controversial, but 30 Seconds to Mars also had one like that on one of their albums, and it was one of those things that, like, I rode the bus and I was like the first kid to be picked up. I had a lot of time to listen to this music, and I think just that, like, that giving me that time to like experience this stuff, and then I like see people that just like listen to like one song at a time, and I'm just like, but you're missing out.
another artist that really composes their album, DPR Ian, so good. I think for me the reason why it makes sense that I do that is whenever I'm doing like coding a certain application or something, I will just listen to the same album over and over and over again. It was kind of funny is whenever I like go back to that code base, I have to listen to that album again because there's like a little relationship there. And like for jogging, I typically have two albums that I listen to.
Yeah.
It's just,
I go back and forth. I mean, I turn on just albums all the time and just listen to them. But I also like have no problem listening to just a song from that album among a bunch of other songs.
Yeah,
yeah, that's how I am.
Have you not been curious about the other songs? Like, you know, because that
like,
one.
Do they miss me or something? I don't know. I don't have to hear that. I don't have to listen to, like, you know,
the whole album to enjoy it.
Like, that's just one thing. But I'll also probably enjoy it more if I do just listen to the album. But that's just, you know.
I'm with Kelly on that. I always do that.
can't believe you guys.
Tim, I make playlists. I make playlists, and I think that's very normal. Mm-hmm.
I do like the act of making a playlist, because like there are sometimes that, like, when I want to hear new music or something like that, you know what I mean? Like on Spotify, mm-hmm. if you reach like the end of an album, Spotify's like, what about this band? And you're like, yeah, they're pretty good. You know, they do try to do that.
I mean, other than when I'm just like throwing on my playlists, I don't re-listen to a lot of old music anymore. I constantly look for new music, and that's kind of my cycle. Man, I just, you know, leverage the algorithm and just let it feed me bands that I want to listen to now. That's kind of what I've gotten into, and I listen to like their whole albums. I'll be obsessed about an album for like, you know, a month, and then I'll find more music, and then they just kind of become part of my playlist. I just absorb them in the blob.
Every year I'll go through this like thing where I just go through all of my old iTunes store songs, my library, just listen to all the old bangers. Just like this one nonstop run through my iTunes library.
That's sick.
That's kind of cool.
A to Z. Dude, you forget how good some of these old bands were.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, there are plenty of bands that like I go back to and like listen to. And I also one of the things that I like doing is like when I find a new band, like lately I've been listening to a band called Silent Planet, named after, by the way, Out of the Silent Planet by C.S. Lewis. Their latest album is fucking brutal. It's really good. It's really well produced and stuff like that. And so because I really like that one, I've been going through their discography, and just like hearing how a band is sort of like evolved and stuff like that. And just hearing how an artist has sort of grown into their music, is really cool. Even if you don't like their older stuff, even if their newer stuff just hits way better and or whatever, it's kind of cool to be like, oh wow, they started off kind of like this band and then they sort of found their voice. I was like doing that.
Mm-hmm. I love watching bands change over time.
Yeah,
there's a band I listen to a lot now recently called Bayside, and they're kind of like hardcore rock, somewhat punkish, but not really. And their old stuff, because I found like their new stuff first. And it was like really heavy and really super, and what I was into it at the time. And then I went back and listened to like their music from like the 20-aughts, and it was just like pretty generic like rock punk, and I was like, I don't need to listen to this. Good for them. They're better now.
Yeah, exactly.
They have a much better sound now.
Yeah, yeah. I always get kind of annoyed whenever like a band like grows and evolves, and then there's people that are always like, oh, the new stuff sucks. And I'm like, dude, they found like their thing. Like if you go back to like Bring Me the Horizon, they were a pretty good band back in the day. They were, you know, heavy metalcore or whatever. But now they've like integrated certain EDM and pop and stuff like that, and they have such a unique sound. And I'm like, you listen to them back then, yeah, you could listen to them, but you listen to them now, they're unmistakable. Who they are.
Yeah. One of my favorite bands growing up was Radiohead, and they changed their sound like every 3 years.
Every album? Yeah. Oh my God, yeah.
It was actually funny, like, about, because, like, I primarily just go pick from different singles and stuff like that. Like, back in the day, like, I had maybe, you know, a couple CDs and stuff, but primarily I benefited off people just giving me music.
Yeah.
And so my discographies were just, like, sporadic. Like, my iTunes, when I actually used it, was just singles and just everything else, so I never was too big into listening, you know, to the whole album. But one band that I remember getting into younger was the band Ministry. And the funniest thing about Ministry is if you ever listen to them in the 80s and listen to them now, it is so vastly different. That yeah. They went from like this synth pop and stuff like that, you know, typical 80s kind of like every band doing that. And now they're like industrial punk. Like they went and just modified into the scene of rebelling against the government. It's just great. But honestly, with going back to Jake's point of like with certain albums, I would say the only type of albums that I've listened to the whole way through because I felt like it actually adds to it is some classical albums. And one of the ones that actually comes to mind immediately was Vivaldi, because he's a fantastic composer.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
But The Four Seasons is probably one of his famous albums, but the way you listen through that is that each segment is a season and it just blends seamlessly into the next one. And you're just kind of like listening to it, and it tries to invoke the feelings of spring, summer, fall, and winter. And it's just like, you can listen, of course, and out of order, doesn't matter, but it does feel better to listen to it like in one solid take.
Yeah. See, I now apply that to all the other stuff you listen to.
Now,
I have a hilarious memory about the Four Seasons, and it goes back to like early iPod days, when iPods were first a thing, or like or MP3 players, whatever. My like friends at school would brag about who has the longest song on their iPod.
I know.
I had the Four Seasons, and it was like 48 minutes long. Uh-huh. So I won.
You could also just say like, I mean, if you weren't counting that, you would just be like, you know what? Dream Theater song. Changing of the Seasons. 24 minute for one song.
I had to get Four Seasons on there to beat those songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I probably took a 25% of the memory on your iPod too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. My 2 gig iPod Nano or whatever.
Unless you had that brick that came out first. And
oh, I know.
No, my first was the iPod Mini? No. One of the first big ones with the color screen, but it wasn't like the fully big one. It wasn't like the rounded edge, the mini. So I can't remember which that one was called. Was it called like iPod 2 or something?
Slim maybe?
I know which one you're talking about because I think that's the one I had as well. And it was cool. It was really annoying because everyone else is like, yeah, I could play like, you know, 100,000 songs. And I'm like, yeah, I could feel like maybe a couple hundred, if that.
Oh, man.
iPods. What a time.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to hear all the people that can hear the great quality on their iPod when they listen to this episode. We are broadcasting into the past for today's episode. So,
it's gonna be a fun one. Buy stocks and Apple. Buy stocks.
Buy stocks and Apple right now.
It still pisses me off every time my dad talks about like, well, yeah, when I first got started in the computer industry, Apple stock was $5 a stock. You're just like, shut up, Dad.
And he did what? What did he do?
Yeah. Bought a house for his family. What a loser.
Lame.
So we had a pretty fun episode last time. A little shopping, little fun stuff. So I want to dive into while last episode was a shopping, I want this one to be sort of a role play thing, because you guys did spend time doing your shopping, but let's talk about what you're doing in Cantargo, money aside. You guys have helped out the Bellflower Network. They're routing out any more of the Scarlet Triad that still exists, so they're sort of working there. You have a lot of connections now. You severely helped out, or will be helping out, Halika Shadeborn. Is there anyone else that you guys want to go talk to? Is there anything else that you guys want to do?
Most likely, I think after the whole situation, he finally got his shopping done. Didn't get what he really wanted, but you know, cloak and boots are nice.
Mm-hmm.
New boots, goofing. He actually, Elfwood wants to talk to Lady Decor.
I'm so glad you said that.
She's a fascinating woman.
She is a fascinating woman. She's also hot. So, at some point, you go out for the evening, and Malara Decor is waiting for you. Like, right as you leave the dream house or something, she's just there.
So, he approaches. Just, hello, Lady Decor. How are you this evening?
You want to dress for the occasion?
Oh, am I? And just kind of twirls slightly with his new cloak.
Yes, seems the night for it.
We are to go out on an evening now together. Come, let us find a more appropriate outfit. We have a long night ahead of us.
Lead the way.
We the viewers see the differences in dress between the two of you. Elk in his ranger outfit and whatever. What is he wearing right now?
Most likely what he usually wears. I mean, I think it's cool, but...
She has other opinions.
I know. I mean, with his 10 charisma, he's like, yeah, this is fine. Like, I wore this in a Mwangi, but it's, you know...
Keeps me nice and warm.
Yeah. But the leather... Like, I think he still just wears the leather. It was the draconic... it was that leather armor.
The leather armor, yeah.
Yeah, and which I had the motif and stuff, so I think it looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
But right now he's wearing, like, the dark green cloak and the boots and stuff like that. I mean, of course he got it tailored to him, but it's definitely, like, adventuring gear. It's not... Yeah,
it's the ranger outfit. It's what of course he wears.
Yeah.
So, with all that you have and all the stitches that you have had to keep making in your clothes to, like, keep it together, it's seen some age. It's seen some stuff. The wounds of your adventure show in what you wear. And that's clearly what she's talking about here. Mm. Because while you're wearing that, Mallari is wearing a very elven outfit. It is resplendent. A tight Cheongsam style dress, which that's the like Chinese style where the sort of like the tight collar neck and like the big buttons.
Yes.
With a high cut up the thigh. The red dress is trimmed with purple vines and golden flowers. She is an image of elegance and power. The juxtaposition of Elkwood in every way as you stroll down the street together. You both arrive at a place called Lunar Couture Boutique. The silvery moon glows on the front of the shop, making it stand out from the rest of the cityscape backdrop. As you two approach the front door, an associate opens it, allowing Mallari to stroll through without hesitation. You follow closely behind and hear the door lock as two designers begin speaking with her.
Lady Decor, it is always such a pleasure to serve you. This is such a lovely gown. What will we be pairing with it today?
A third associate comes out with a small jewelry chest open to reveal a lavish set of earrings and a matching necklace.
I am well outfitted this evening, Mallari cuts in. My companion is your subject.
Oh, a million apologies, Lady Decor. We wrongly assumed he was just muscle, and he is just that. But this evening he will be more. Give him the latest, and make sure we match.
Without question, they begin sizing you up and fetching all the pieces of the attire for your night out. Eventually, they find something that fits properly, and they begin cinching everything to make sure that it's nice and slim. And they put you in a deep red blazer with buttons down the side of the chest, as opposed to the center, so it sort of has like that military look to it,
ooh,
you know?
Ooh, yeah. I like that.
Okay. It's a very refined look. Mm-hmm. The trim is gold with a leaf pattern tracing every edge of the jacket. As you leave the boutique and walk down the street, you begin walking into the Jarvis End district of Cantargo. You know this place to be just east of the Castle District and is the city's arts and entertainment center, with theaters, dance halls, casinos, and restaurants. You can hear music from taverns and the oohs and ahs of brilliant spectacles all around you. Street performers doing their best to get into the hottest clubs and most prestigious productions. However, you walk past all of these with Lady Decor and go straight to the Cantargo Opera House.
Oh, oh boy. Hey, society is fine, all right? He has skills in it. He understands it.
Yeah,
barely.
The Cantargo Opera House. The enormous theater in Jarvis End has long been the heart of Cantargo's robust art scene. Temporarily closed by House Thrun during Barzilai's rule, the theater is now reopened and busier than ever, with performances nearly every night. Hmm. Tonight, the sign out front says Victory of the Ravens, with an illustration of a silver raven fighting what appears to be the devil of some kind. And for all of our Marylanders, there's a few confused Baltimore football fans that are just like, it said raisins.
Rub with purple and white camo all over it.
Yeah, we're exactly.
We're not a bright fan base. But we're passionate.
We're passionate, God damn it. We're passionate. As you walk up with Malari, you are handed a program where on the back it says, join us for a marvelous retelling of the victory over fear, oppression, devilry, and evil itself. Let us inspire you this evening of the with the dramatic reenactment of Barzalai's defeat and the end of his tyrannical reign. No more will he or his spirit remain in the city. Clearly, this is bolstered by you, what you all did behind the scenes. Please enjoy snacks and beverages before the show and during the intermission. Beer is $9.
Wait, was that gold? Was that copper? Nine copper?
It's a single gold piece for a beer.
My God, it must be a good beer. It's like a Michelob.
It's fine. Is this just a White Claw? What the heck?
It's a lukewarm Miller Lite.
It's a Truly, actually.
It's a Truly. Just like $9. As the crowd filters in, you and Lady Decor are led up the stairs by ushers to a balcony seat overlooking the entire crowd. You and her are entirely alone. Some of the other patrons are looking up at you and whispering amongst themselves. It's clear they care a whole lot about Malari's personal life, while it's also perfectly clear she has no concerns over who cares in the first place. Her stoicism, in the face of what could cause others to overthink their entire situation, is inspiring, to say the least. The show starts off with a dark and foreboding score, while lights deep in red slowly illuminate a crowd of people on center stage. A person dressed in a devil costume is swung down from the rafters behind the crowd, cackling loudly. A single figure in the crowd reaches his hand up toward the devilish being, and a platform raises him into the air above the rest. He reaches his finger out to touch the outstretched hand of the devil. When their hands touch, a wave of blood and fire washes over the crowd, who die one by one while begging for their lives. It's some of the best acting you've ever seen. Next is a montage of Barzalai's rise to power and all those he cut down to get there. While there is talking, many of the scenes are made compelling through the music. The orchestra and visual spectacle that accompanies the great and terrible power that Barzalai gains throughout his conquest sets everyone in the audience into a state of fear. But they remain seated, for they know that evil does not win in the end. At this point, there's an intermission. And Lara Decor sort of looks at you. Are you enjoying the show so far?
Yes, why yes. It's actually the effects are very well done, compared to what I've seen in Absalom. And he, I would say, like, during that whole point of, like, seeing people, his perception is, like, high enough that he is probably, like, noticing everyone staring. And it makes him slightly uncomfortable, but he's just following her, what's the word for it? He's just following her, well, her attitude as well.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
he doesn't wish to upset anything. And with how he was raised, and also like the criminality and also slight nobility, he understands presence. And he's just like, yes, no, the play is, it's one I've never seen before. It's quite interesting. And the effects are quite fascinating as well. To see the plot spray at the beginning. But I'm quite enjoying it. Thank you.
She looks at you and then looks at the they're setting things up for the second half, and she just goes, it's tragic what we dealt with in the city. I am a Katargan through and through, and I was there when he rose. I always think about that there was more I wish I could have done. But it is true that we cannot do it alone.
course. To be honest, I don't know too much regarding this city, but from everything that I've heard, it's the acts of devastation against the people. You did what you could.
I know. Eventually the lights dim and the second half of the show starts. The second half details the heroics of a mysterious group known as the Silver Ravens. They start off in a modest state as perhaps normal people that stepped up when they were needed, or maybe they were affected by Barzilai directly. After all, he left no speck of perceived resistance to live in his rise to power. The rebellion against Barzilai was one filled with trial and strife, but everyone knows that the strength and drive of goodness succeeded. Eventually, the show comes to a climax. We see the heroes of the story striking down cultish, devilish creatures, a blue dragon, and finally, the battle against Barzilai himself. Aerial acrobatics and bombastic illusion spells fill the entire stage and even spill into the audience for what would be considered like a 4D experience today. Yeah, except for like the water thing that sprays your feet at random times, you know?
I mean, if only. If only it was like this.
During the final battle in this scene, one of the Silver Ravens appears to be struck down by Barzilai. What's interesting is that this appears to take Malari by surprise, as you can hear her, and with your keen elf ears, she sucks in her breath in shock. So she kind of does a. However, she remains with her composure, regardless. When Barzilai is slain, in true heroic form by each of the remaining heroes at once, the crowd erupts in applause and shouts of praise. The house lights dim and curtain is called. The actors do their regular thing of coming out to say their things with standing ovations, all well-deserved, of course. Malari says nothing and takes your hand to leave.
He accepts it and follows without making a scene, but he did take note.
So you leave, it's only about like 10:30 at this point. There's still people milling about. She's talking to some people and everything like that. Is there anything you want to do at this point?
I think it's probably about she's in kind of inspecting, seeing who she's talking to and stuff like that, but overall I won't say like arm candy at this point, but he's just kind of unsure of what to properly do. Like, he'll talk to someone, but besides what else he is, I mean, like, he's like, hey, I killed that thing over there, like, you know. But he's trying to hobnob as well as he can, but he's not the best at it.
The scene it kind of reminds me of, do you remember in Lord of the Rings when Galadriel is like walking down the stairs and her husband is with her and like nobody cares?
It's pretty much it. And the thing is, Elk's always been considered part of the background. I mean, that's how he's kind of been trained to be part of the background, to be not noticed by everyone.
Right. And so you're Celeborn in this, where everyone's focused on her. All the people that she's talking to, she's very upstanding. There's because she runs a school, there's like parents that are coming up and are talking about, you know, how good their daughter is doing and all of her studies and all this kind of stuff. And she's very good with a sword. Have you seen her practice? And Malari just, yes, I have. So, as you all begin walking down the street, as things sort of fizzle out, Lady Decor turns to you after not saying anything for some time, so she goes, Elkwood, do you enjoy dancing?
And he laughs slightly. I would say that I've been told that I have the footwork for it, but I do not have the skill, if that says anything.
I wish to see how elven your feet are. Elvish music has become popular these days at Little Miss Drury's. Let us go. And sure. She begins leading you to another place down the road, still in Jarvis End.
Uh-huh.
Little Miss Drury's is among the bevy of dance halls in Jarvis End, which are often some combination of tavern, brothel, and music venue. This new establishment prides itself on drawing crowds to its dance contest and performances of experimental music. It's one of those.
Okay.
You go up, you can hear all sorts of noise and music happening. You think every elf in Cantargo is in this place when you walk in. There's about 10 humans in this place and a crowd of 50. And some of them are half-elves, you included.
Yes.
So it's clear this is the spot she was talking about. Mm. The elvish music you hear when you walk in is somewhat strange compared to the others you were hearing in the street. There's a mix of numerous string instruments and light tambourines, and the elvish voices to accompany it all are, like, absolutely heavenly. The lyrics themselves speak of everything from the love between trees, the starfall, the battle in the darklands, and even a far-off home, which, as we all know, is Castorwell. That tale as old as time that's just been passed down through ages upon ages of the elves. So she sort of looks at you, and she kind of nudges. Come.
And he goes, and honestly, probably with the music, and he's listening to it now that he understands, you know, Elvin, how he learned from Adelar, there's a bit of melancholy for a moment. It's the only reason he knows it is because of Adelar.
Yeah.
So his mind kind of drifts off for a moment until she nudges him, and then he just goes, oh, yes, please, lead the way.
So I always imagine Elvish dancing to sort of be like Indian, where it's all very choreographed, and there's a lot of, like, elegance and flow to it. I don't know if you watch, like Bollywood movies and stuff like that, where they have, like, dude, it, oh my god. I could just watch that all day. The amount of work that goes into it.
Come on, man, I got 20 decks. I can do this.
there's a group that's doing one particular dance right now. So you can either do performance, which I'm sure you don't have,
I have a plus zero.
Okay, all right. Or you can do acrobatics, which is more of just getting the movements down, not necessarily doing them spectacularly or elegantly. So it's just knowing the steps and, like, how to do them.
I'll do acrobatics.
Do acrobatics.
Okay. I was like, I got plus 22. Let's go.
That is a 33. So she did her dance, or her perform, obviously. So she's more elegant, but you did so well in the actual steps themselves that she is thoroughly impressed. So, you don't have the flow of it, but boy, your footwork is perfect.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like, he basically can match things, like, step by step. Like, he understands how to throw his feet and move. Like, he can carry his weight, he can drift.
Yeah.
And, like, he knows what he to do. He just doesn't have that finesse, like, that final...
You're a technician. You don't have any flair.
Yeah. There you go.
There you go. I don't have the flair, but damn, I will try.
Yeah. So you know, and others are thoroughly impressed with this too. So you definitely get a few claps and a few people sort of taking your lead as you're sort of like doing the steps well enough that you know, and anybody that might not be as good, they're sort of doing what you're doing.
Follow me. People that sucks like me do it.
At a certain point, the music sort of dies down, and the elvish bands and the elvish musicians are start retiring. It's about 11:30 now at night, and the stage opens up to others to play. You see Malari speaking with someone outside of earshot, and she's handed two orange beverages. This is whatever the elven equivalent of mimosas are.
Oh.
And she
I can destroy mimosa. All right, let's go.
I do love a good mimosa. And so she goes over and she hands you one. This is not the first rank, obviously. There's been a lot of elven ales and stuff like that have been flowing here, even at the opera house, even though they were 9 gold pieces.
We got money.
And so she seemed to be talking more than just about drinks with this person. But when she looks at the drink, she sort of nods at them and then walks away. It seemed like the drink she was handed confirmed something. And so when she comes over, she just hands it to you and says, "Let's settle down for a minute. Here, take this."
Takes it. Not really suspecting much about it. Kind of gives it a smell, just kind of like, this is... trying to get a vibe for... This is citrusy, is it?
Yeah, it smells like an elven mimosa.
Ooh. Takes a sippy sip.
You take a little sippy sip. It's pretty good. It's a good one. So you two settle down and you begin talking about different dances and stuff like that. She starts elaborating on some of the places she learned and all of that kind of stuff. And there's a bard on stage that she is striking, to say the least. She has red hair down to her shoulders, and she has obviously bardic outfit, you know, elegant and, you know, flashy and stuff like that. She's really tall too. And as she begins singing a song, the lyrics in the song seem to be talking about just like the battle between light and dark and all this kind of stuff. It's an epic tale. It's an epic tale of sorts. And as they're describing the characters in the story, all of a sudden you recognize that one of the characters has something of a black cloak. This song is about Benson.
His attention kind of focuses a bit more on the song now. Like, kind of like if they were like reclining, like the type of seating I would assume in a place like this would be more of a booth, kind of like side booths and stuff. And he, you know, they were just kind of casually listening. But as soon as it kind of mentions more about it, just kind of his eyes, kind of like he tilts his head slightly and listens.
And she clearly picks up on this and she goes, "Do you know this song?"
"No, I've never heard of it before, but the subject of it seems very familiar."
"Oh, I've heard this song before. I've seen her play."
"Play?"
"Yes, she's quite good."
And, like, so any further thing regarding the song, it's just about... Is it about Benson himself or the cloak?
It seems to be about him. It's some sort of trial or some sort of fight that he was in. It's obviously overdone because she's a bard. Yeah. But, yeah, this song is about him.
That's so cool.
I'm like, is it like starting at Breach Hill or is it pre-Breach Hill?
That's what I want to know. That's why he's like listening. He's like, "Breach Hill sounds like Benson, but he's not 10 feet tall and cuts to the hills in half."
I mean, that might track.
Back when he was level 1, he was...
The song comes and goes, and not an eye is blinked at this thing that you just realized.
He just kind of laughs a little bit about it. Like, this song keeps going. Like, "Wow, I wonder if he knows about this. Oh, I'll have to tell him. Do you have the name of this bard, or the play itself?"
She looks over at the chalkboard that's, like, you know, behind the bar or something like that, or, like, in the front. And, yeah, Poppy is her name.
"Oh. He will document that."
Eventually, the rest of the night sort of turns into a daze. There's obviously alcohol in your system, and the elven magic in the air, not actual arcane magic, but just the feeling of the night. Mm-hmm. It's sort of... all of that in the air whisk you away into a sort of euphoric dream-like experience. Until eventually you find yourself sitting on the outside of Kintargo looking into it. And this beautiful cityscape that you and her are sitting alone, just watching.
I have to say, first time coming into this city, it was a bit rough, but right now it's quite beautiful.
I absolutely adore this city, Elkwood.
You know,
Sorry. No, it's my fault. This was a strange night for me as well. I'm sure you saw that people were staring at us. I don't usually go out to things, nor with a man in my arm.
Or at least someone that looks as rough as me.
I tried my best.
I heard the tailor. They like a challenge.
I do, but I think they did well. And she's looking at your... There's like one button unbuttoned on you.
I mean, we were drinking. There was dancing. I did what I could.
Yes, yes, I know. And she kind of laughs. It's the first time you probably heard her laugh. But, and she goes... This was fun, and this was a night for me to gain information. And this was also a night to test myself. Elkwood, do you know what it's like for us elves to bond our souls to someone that won't live nearly as long?
He kind of quiets down for a moment, and... No, not really. I will have to say I've lived a very tumultuous life. There was nothing like that. Never had a chance, to be honest. And... He kind of like looks away because he's just kind of like he's thinking back to his previous like kind of life and how it was, and going into this it just felt so kind of pure and fun. He also knows that this is a mission, like we're supposed to be going out to a quarry.
Yeah,
but it's kind of like that he never got to experience a normal like growing up station, and it's kind of messed with him quite a bit.
Yeah.
And he's like kind of unconsciously or subconsciously kind of like picking at his finger slightly. And mm-hmm. But yes, no, I've never really had that chance.
I did once. I fell desperately in love with a man. However, he passed in normal circumstances, and I haven't had the heart to do it again, to suffer in that way. I loved him so deeply and truly that I cut myself off from ever trying again, and this night gave me a piece of that, and I want to thank you for it.
Well, my lady, I'm glad I was able to help, at least assist in something like this.
I also learned many things tonight. Lacoon effects conveys information in various ways. We can teach you, if you would like. I feel as though you would be an asset to us and our cause. I learned one thing about you that I already suspected, but I know that you work for Mr. Grimm.
And it's kind of as soon as she says it, he kind of grits his teeth slightly.
kind of prepares, like, he's kind of half expecting to get something shot into him or something at this point.
Fair enough. All that it confirmed for me was that you were raised in terrible circumstances. Mr. Grimm might have taught you how to kill, but he did not teach you how to live. And that is why we fight. That is why we do what we do. When you suffer as this city has, and she points to Kintargo, and you now knowing the trauma that they deal with, living is the greatest thing we can do. And protecting those is all that matters, so that they might live in a way that we did not have the affordance to do.
And he stays silent for a moment. He's trying to... It's namely one of someone else just figuring out. I mean, he should have realized this. Like, I mean, I don't know if you really revealed how her network kind of works, but, I mean, with how she kind of is, I mean, he knew it was coming, but... Yes, he... Well, I had several teachers, that taught me certain ways of dealing with individuals. And it definitely didn't help, to say the least.
There is a place for you in the Kunafex, should you desire it.
And he kind of, like, panics for a moment. I can't. No, he will know. He's expecting a report. He's expecting this. He knows if I veer off the path, I'll be hunted as well. I can't escape this life. I killed those that tried to escape this life before. And he's kind of, like, cracking slightly.
And she sort of gently holds your hand.
Yeah, and he's kind of takes it. He's like, to be honest, I was before here. We were in the Mwangi, where I met the Kuje elves, and there I felt I was at peace because it felt pure. I felt fine. I felt included. But then I had these visions. I didn't tell any of the others about this, but that I was going to be, my past was going to come back and wreak havoc on any life that I tried to establish a new one. I just can't.
I know, Elkwood. And there is a place for you here, if you so desire it. It is ultimately your decision. There could even be a place at my side, but I must think more on that. I'm sorry, I don't know what to think of this night. I must tell you that I learned something that shook me greatly when we were in the Opera House. Right now, the Silver Ravens are deep in the Darklands on a secret mission. And the show tonight told me that one of them has perished.
That is... Oh. And that's the moment where she reacted.
Yeah.
I know it's not my place to ask, but what's... Just go into the Darklands. Who was it?
I can't speak any more on it, unfortunately.
Yes, I understand.
But the Silver Ravens were the secret heroes of the city. And they're still acting today. The only reason why you have not heard of them, unheard of their feats, in a sense the use of Barzalai, is because they keep everything behind a veil. It is for their safety and for the safety of the Bellflower Network, of Lacuna Fex, of all of it. Information is power, great and terrible power. And so with that,
I need to rest and think on this. I need to process these feelings.
I completely understand. And he kind of laughs nervously just because it was a very chaotic night full of, you know, joy, kind of a experimentation of, like, stuff he never really experienced before. And he's just kind of, oh, please, if I want to have any sort of normalcy of this night, allow me to walk you back.
As you wish. And you begin walking, and roll me a perception check.
I'm not good at that.
That is not true.
I'm drunk and hurt mentally. Oh, that's a 17 on die. 35.
You realize now, perhaps, maybe as everything sort of settled down and there's not so much happening, that there has been at least two people near you at all times. Huh. That you're like, oh,
guards.
She was never alone.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to be like, and when she said, as you wish, what she really meant was, I love you.
I love you.
And then I slept that night.
I think she might be down, guys.
That's what she meant. God damn it. Taking a shower later.
Yeah, Elkwood wakes up the next morning, takes a cup of coffee. He's like, God damn it.
Or he's going to come across the hall.
The two of you walk back. You go back to the school. You have a very elvish goodbye. Mm. By that I mean you don't touch.
I was about to say, do you jazz hands? Do you wave?
Like, yeah, right. Yeah,
I would say like a very using instead of performance acrobatics to a bow. Like he's like if you played The Witcher 3 when they're trying to teach Geralt how to bow.
Oh my god, that clip of Hannah and I playing is on Twitch, and it is really some of the funniest things because you can make Geralt bow. You can make Geralt bow incorrectly, and each time they're just like, "You idiot." It's so funny.
The major domo was just like, please, just do it correctly.
Please, just do it correctly.
Wait, what is this you're talking about?
The Witcher. The Witcher 3.
Yeah, in the game.
In the game, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, actually, it's a video game. I know you don't play those.
I'm sorry.
Your kids and your video games and electronics.
No, it's a Netflix show that was good for one season.
That's all I know it as.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kelly, you also look like a witcher, so I don't know. I don't know why you haven't just.
Yeah, that's true. You just say that because he's white and has facial hair.
School for dragon.
Wait, Mark, are you a witcher?
What?
So, what are the rest of you bozos doing while Elkwood is having the night of his fucking life?
I really wanted Benson or someone just to be trying to stealth the entire time. Be like, what are they up to? And just
yeah, Benson stealth.
They're in the opera house, just like looking.
Kezra is just, I mean, he's just spending all of his time drinking and just like having fun. Telling people about how they slay the wizard and like just totally hamming it up. He's doing the superhero thing again. Like,
oh, yeah.
He doesn't give a shit. But he's just like getting drunk in bars, talking about how he like threw a blue guy out of a window and
like, wait, Zach, I love that guy.
Struck down an archmage with lightning. Even though he wasn't even in the room when he got killed.
Oh man, without Adelar there. The real man.
Kesper had to fill in. He had to fill in the gaps where he wasn't part of the fight, so he inserted himself as dealing the death blow.
And while I was gone, I was also in this other place. Nobody questions your story. It's too cool.
And one of the prisoners was really hot. She was like, "Ah, cool."
We all want to marry you now.
Benson is probably trying to work with the local guard. Just trying to help them. Because they all suck, apparently.
Man, this is a history of Benson's life right now. Training the guard everywhere.
I can't believe it. I mean, you guys would need a secret cabal of elves to keep you people safe with these guards.
Benson's like, I'm not going to spend a couple of weeks resting. I'm going to build a police force.
Yep. There's nothing stronger than a player's disdain for the local town guards.
Yep.
Whether they're against them or whether they're incompetent, they just hate those guys.
The town guards roll up after the fight, and they're like, what's going on here? And all the party members are like, we're doing your fucking job!
Oh, man.
I think Grimshaw is cleaning out underneath the Thorny Rose Tavern, getting things in order because it was just left a mess. You know, dead bodies of Scarlet Triad members. So cleaning all that up with the help of Sir Thorne. And he's very concerned about the one member that he found the tool belt of, but he never found. So I think he's probably going to try to be chasing down any leads on him to see what happened to him.
All right.
I'll Marvin, right? Yeah, Marvin.
Yeah,
it was
Marvin. Forge. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, he was a dwarf. Yeah. I'll say this.
Marvin Gaye.
No,
maybe. Can you, like, hire an investigator?
I am the investigator. No, he's trying to leverage the Bellflower Network. You know, yeah. Like seeing if just mm-hmm. like. He knows, like, people in the network. I don't think he knows anyone in Lacuna Fex, but I think people in the Bellflower Network know people in Lacuna Fex, so he's trying to leverage, like, kind of like a second degree of separation to get intel on this guy.
So I rolled just to see what your investigation would turn up with the work of the Bellflower Network and Lacuna Fex. And so you guys were poring over all the stuff in the basement of the Thorny Rose and going through all their stuff and everything like that. I rolled a natural 20. Okay.
Damn.
Which unfortunately gives you a very grim look into what happened. As you find what is unmistakably the bone of a dwarven hand. And you now remember that Rakshasa eat people.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah.
And so it very grimly dawns on you what just happened.
Yeah, so he's reaching out to his contacts. He's, you know, cleaning out underneath the, you know, in the secret base. And I can picture the moment that Grimshaw, like, spots it. You know, he's like, straightening up here, tidying up here, going through Malus's notes, you know? He's got spell books, he's got textbooks. He's, like, anything for a clue. And then when he's in that room, I think, is when he spots something in the corner. And he's like, oh, what's that? And then as he's examining it, he just... I mean, he breaks down and just starts weeping for yet another thorn that has been broken. And
well, remember what you felt. Vengeance is ahead of you.
Vengeance.
And this just solidifies it even more.
Yeah. You can almost see, like, as he's weeping in grief, his morning star by his side begins to glow that purplish hue, but more sharp, like the time that it powered, it was infused with the goddess's power. And he feels that, and as he's just, like, holding this in his hands, Marvin, you join the ranks of those who have given it all to protect the people here. And I vow that they will never see what is coming. They will rue the day that they left their stain here on the city. And you, and Athena, and even those living, Sir Thorne, they will all pay for what they have done. I vow it.
Yeah, Grimshaw's rightly rightly so, broken up about this. But he knows the task ahead. He knows what he has to do. So, Kezra, in your escapades of talking about all the cool stuff that you did in the city and going to every bar, going to every place, spend a lot of nights drinking within this time as you're, you know, respecking and buying your stuff and everything like that. So, wait, we're here 3 days, I think, is what it was. Is that what we landed on?
Yeah. No, we were 3 days. We're going to be here longer than three days.
Okay, me,
yeah. Respecking took a little bit of time.
I was thinking
2 weeks.
Oh, okay. That being said, 2 weeks is a lot. So, Kezra at night is doing his usual thing. You wake up in your bed one night, and you wake up because the room's spinning. We've all been there.
I'm just happy I made it back to my bed.
I know, yeah, yeah.
Wait, are your pants on?
Somebody probably put you there, but you wake up because you hear something rattling at your door. Not like the handle, but like the door itself.
Yeah.
Something gently tapping at his chamber door.
Rap tap tapping at your chamber door.
Because there's like, go away.
And you, as you groan that out and you look, you see little Kezra is wriggling his way through the bottom of your bedroom door. Out.
What the fuck? He like scrambles up. No pants.
No.
lumbers his way through the room. He's like, hey, get back here.
By the time you stand up to walk over, he has already squeezed through and is on the other side.
Alright, he opens up the door, fumbles around for the handle, tries to open it in the wrong direction, then he, like,
naturally,
in a mat, and then just mad, like, throws it and, like, slams against the wall when he finally opens it. Get back here! And I stumble out into the hallway.
When you open the door, you see a little Kezra is slithering down the hallway, and he weaves around the corner.
He follows him.
Not many people know this, but snakes are much faster than one might think, and this is kind of a perfect demonstration of that, because, like, you're a person. You're 6 foot something or whatever, right. And you're like, yeah. And so, like, each time you round a corner in the Thorny Rose, you see a little Kezra, and he's, like, just rounding the next one. Just like, ugh.
Get back here, snake.
This goes on for about a minute until you reach the crevice in the Crimson Briar's hideout.
Like, to go downstairs?
Yeah, so you go downstairs.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so you have to go downstairs, but, like, you follow him downstairs, and then you see it. You follow him until you get to the crevice.
Oh, jeez, okay.
Your familiar begins descending the sharp stones that make up the walls of the drop into pure darkness.
Okay. He's too tired to come up with any light. Just, like, stares down to the crevice.
Does Dream On start playing, and then does Kezra just leap into the dark pit?
Dream On! Does Kezra not have dark vision?
Do I have dark vision?
Do you? Yeah. I have low light vision.
Mm. Okay, there are torches there, so you can grab one.
He grabs a torch off a sconce and waves it over the crevice.
Yeah. So you see him just slowly slithering in between rocks. You know, snakes are really good at climbing, so he's just sort of weaving his way in between the stones until eventually he gets to the bottom, and there's a archway, a natural archway that he's slithering toward in the top right, in the top left corner of this crevice.
Alright, because like, where the hell are you going? And he will sprout his wings and just jump into the crevice.
So while you follow the snake into this hole, you can see that it's almost like he's waiting for you at the edge of it. And when you finally get down, he makes his way around, so he's out of sight again.
Yeah, he just meanders through.
So, last you heard this, last you heard from the Crimson Briar, the natural formation here just leads into a cave system.
Mm-hmm.
It has been explored, but was found too tight in some places to be explored further, and not nearly dangerous enough to actually be taken care of. So when you go in, you clearly see what's happening is there's like, if you've ever been in a kind of, or if you've ever seen a cave system, there's like, you know, tiny little spaces that Kezra can go through, but you have trouble with. So you kind of have to like squeeze your way, and you got to like twist your body a bit. And so you follow little Kezra around rocking bends and through tight spaces for what seems like an hour.
Jeez.
Oh.
Your hands, legs, and torso get cut up and bruised in pursuit. Each time you reach a point where your familiar could simply disappear, it patiently waits for you.
Where are you taking me?
Eventually, you find a spot in which a purple glow can be seen spilling into natural corridors. So imagine you're like looking down a hallway, mm-hmm. and there's a room to the side, and light spilling out of it, kind of like that.
He'll continue through, squeezing.
As you make your way to it, you see that the purple glow is coming from some kind of subterranean bioluminescent fungus.
Pretty.
The fungus illuminates a massive empty cavern, the walls of which are covered with craters of varying sizes. The only thing of note you see is a female figure bathed in shadow standing in the center of the room. And you see little Kezra is quickly making his way toward her.
Hey, you over there. What's going on? He starts to slowly proceed, just but a little more cautious.
As your snake approaches, she kneels down and picks him up very gently, allowing him to weave between her fingers and around her wrists. Seems very familiar. Well, pardon the pun. As you approach, she says, I'm happy that you answered my call. This little tool you keep around was quite useful for me.
It's you. Yeah. You're listening. Snake spies on me.
So, as you think you know who it is, she takes her hood off, and it is not who you thought it was.
Huh? He stops what he was about to say. He just stares, puzzled. Do I know you?
You must be wondering why I've summoned you. It is because I wish to make an accord.
What do you want?
It is simple. Leave her service and pledge your allegiance with me instead.
Why should I do that?
What sort of rewards have you reaped in your service servitude to her? The magic was already in your blood. The greatness you have achieved was by you and you alone. All you have gained from her is a scrying spy, as she holds Lokezer, and a dead friend. And yet you still bow before her, kissing her feet like a sniveling dog. You could gain something. Anything your heart desires with me. All you must do is trust within me. And my name.
What is your name?
She sort of scoffs. See, she's taught you nothing. She's taught you only arrogance.
I am greater than all of those who have come before me.
And she begins turning around, and she walks up what appears to be an invisible staircase of some kind. You can hear what sounds like metal jingling every step she takes.
When Barzilai employed me, I thought he would be great. But in fact, he was a fool too. He was a fool blinded by his own arrogance. But I have gained power far beyond what he could achieve. And here I stand. Revo's there.
And the illusion drops. What you see before you is a room filled with gold and gems and treasures. And a woman that, as she spreads her cloak out, the cloak turns into wings. Draconic wings with a blue scale covering each and every inch.
Oh, shit.
But a little different than the blue dragon you know. Because this blue dragon has red horns coming out of her head and a symbol of Asmodeus on her chest.
Oh. Holy shit.
Please roll me lore dragon.
Yeah.
I actually think I know what this is.
28.
More than enough to know. In the Hell's Rebels campaign, there was a blue dragon named Revozer that Barzilai convinced to hellbound herself to a horned devil. Everyone thought she died. It is clear she is not.
You're supposed to be dead.
Fools might think that, but I have only grown stronger. The one you pledged to will soon rue the day, and you and I can take her. If you only work with me.
And what do you want? My goals are clear, but what do you want?
If you pledge your service to me, I will give you a boon. All that I ask in return. For now, is to find the origin of the Scarlet Triad. I know what they've done in the city, but there is something missing from the history books of where they began.
And it seems our goals do align.
I thought the same thing, Gezer de Rujan. See, she's like shaking with anticipation.
Kezra, with like a kind of a maniacal smile, looks to the snake and goes,
"So if I were to do this, what do I do with him?"
"He is useful for now. Allow her to use him. It will not raise suspicions if nothing is amiss. But my boon for now will aid you greatly in your trip to the quarry." And she holds her hand out and she says, "Give me your weapon," pointing to the gauntlet.
He will pulls it off. Stares at it for a second. He's had it for a while now. It's a little sentimental. It's pretty cool. And reaches out to hand it to her.
And she holds it and she goes, "You can turn back now. There are others who will serve me just as well. You could forget about all of this and go. I have magic that can employ it. But give me the word and I will transform this."
"No. I've never been known as a loyal type. But I do know a good opportunity when I see one.
You're spectacular, man. You are spectacular, man, Kezra." And she puts the gauntlet in front of her, and you can see this magic overcome the gauntlet, and what was once a cinder claw gauntlet now appears more like a devil's claw with horns, and there seems to be a emblem of a chain wrapped around it. And she hands it back to you.
Dang. Kezzer just puts it on. Kind of marvels at it for a minute. This is, looks nice. Do I know what it do I know what it does or how it's different?
So this is a custom weapon that I made.
Ooh,
so,
cool.
Get ready for this. So it, your gauntlet was a plus one striking gauntlet, right?
Yes.
Okay. So it is now a... So this is called... I'm going to call it the Cornigan Claw after the Horned Devil that she is bound to.
Yes.
What it does is still the... plus one striking, blah, blah, blah. Except, you now get plus 1d6 fire, and when applicable, 1d6 evil.
Oh, shit.
Sick. Love it.
Now, we know how that works, in that if it only affects the diametrically opposed. So, if you ever fight someone good, a devilish claw will do horrible things to them in that fight. Additionally, on a critical hit, the chain materializes and sticks into your target, meaning that they have to use an escape to get away from you.
Amazing.
Oh, shit.
Imagine you do that, and then I immediately retributive strike them after that. Just beating the living shit out of whatever we're fighting.
Awesome.
I was hoping that when he was like, do I know what it does now? You were going to have her just say, it's a purchasable skin.
Wait, did you buy the expansion pack? No, what?
Well, Kezra's mind like lit up right away when he realized who she was, because... you know, what little pious, what little piety he has, it is to Abadar because of Adalar.
Yeah.
And, you know, he knows a bit about Asmodeus as being kind of like a parallel to Abadar, but both like, you know, both bound by law and like order. And, yeah. You know, they're not, like, they're allies, those two guys, Abadar and...
Abadar is Asmodeus' only friend.
Yeah, his only friend.
That's the best part.
Mm-hmm. So, like, he sees this, like, you know, this the symbol of Asmodeus and this, you know, dragon dedicated to him as almost like a sign, like, I've been sent help to get vengeance.
And once again, we hear that word. Vengeance. I'll see you guys next time.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy.